out will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
Welcome to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we have a very special episode with Mr. David Hawk. David was one of the top pros in the 1980s. He won the 1985 NPC USA Championships overall as a light heavyweight. And then David, right after that contest, went over to the World Games, which was held in London, England. And David won the light heavyweight class there and got his pro card. And then he competed for several years as a pro bodybuilder in the Night of the Champions. He also did the Pro World, which later became the Arnold Classic. So we did a long interview with David. We caught up. I actually know David from back in 1982 when we both competed in the Teenage Mr. America contest, which was the AAU Teenage Mr. America. And that was held out here in Chicago where I grew up. So David and I go 30 years back. That was, I can't believe that was 30 years ago when we were talking and we did our interview. So anyways, we have a two-part interview with David. This will be part one, and we'll talk about how David got involved with weight training and his teenage career, and then going all the way to the MPC USA and the World Games. All right. So what else is going on with you guys? I had a very busy weekend. That's why this podcast is up a little late this week. I went to the Arnold Classic over the weekend. I was there from Thursday through Sunday. That was the first time in 6 years I've been to the contest. Last time I was there was 2016. And this was the first time that the Arnold Classic was kind of back to normal after the pandemic. The last 2 years, it's really been messed up. It hit the Arnold Classic in 2020, like the week before the Arnold Classic. They had everything planned. They had the expo, and then they had to cancel everything because of the coronavirus, which happened, like I said, like I think it was a week before. It was really chaotic that year. And they didn't even allow, I think, an audience in to see the contest. But they ran the contest, but it was really nuts. And then last year, of course, they delayed it from March all the way to September. So it's really only been about 5 months, I guess, 4 or 5 months since they had the Arnold Classic. It doesn't seem like a full year because it hasn't been. So yeah, now this time it was back to normal. And they had a full expo. It was packed. Nobody was wearing masks. So hopefully this pandemic thing is behind us. And the crowd was also really packed for the show, especially Saturday night. I was sitting up in front in the press area, and I looked back, and it was completely packed, even the balcony. So they had a really, really good outcome, a really good turnout, I should say. And the Arnold Classic is back. It was kind of weird because this was the first year they did it without Jim Lorimer. The Lorimer family is no longer associated with Arnold. So they had a whole new production team. But, of course, Arnold himself was there, and it was pretty much back to normal. They didn't have a Lifetime Achievement Award, which I thought was weird. I don't know why they didn't do that. But other than that, it was pretty much normal. And the show itself was very good. The competition was really good in all the categories. And I went to the seminar on Sunday, which is usually the most favorite part for me of the whole event because you get to talk to Arnold. He didn't stick around long this time. He's making a movie, I guess. I think it's a TV show. It's not a movie. It's for one of the streaming services. And it's like a True Lies variation of the movie that he did, True Lies, where he plays a secret agent and he finds out his daughter, who is now in her 30s, is also a secret agent. He didn't know that. So I think it's going to be like a limited series show. And so he was leaving for Toronto. So he had to leave the seminar. But anyways, it was a really enjoyable weekend. I was really long. I did the wrap ups for RX Muscle with Chris Aceto. So if you go on YouTube and go under RX Muscle's website or channel, I should say, you can check out those wrap-ups. It was really enjoyable doing that with Chris. He's very, very knowledgeable about bodybuilding. He can break down a contest like no one else can in the industry. So that was good. And I also got to do some interviews. They had a Meet the Athletes event on Thursday night before the show got started on Friday. And so I did a lot of interviews, and that is also up on RX Muscle. So check that out if you get a chance. I also wrote the contest reports about the competitions for both nights, and that is on digitalmuscle.com. So if you want to read my reports about the show, check out digitalmuscle.com. Probably the highlight for me of the whole weekend was I got to meet with Lee Haney, and we had breakfast on Sunday. I think I mentioned this on the show before. Lee wants me to write something about the history of bodybuilding for his personal training certification, which I think is called IAFS. And he teaches personal training certification for bodybuilders and also just for regular people, like for people who are, or for trainers who are going to be training just regular population. So with the bodybuilding section, he wants to create a part of that is going to be about bodybuilding history. So I got started on it. Lee was putting pressure on me to write it. So I started writing. I wrote about like 5 pages and went all the way back to Eugene Sandow and the strongmen they had there. And it was really interesting. I was looking at Randy Roach's books to get some information, and also Bill Pearl's Legends of the Iron Game, where he chronicles all the major personalities going all the way back to Eugene Sandow's era. So I got a lot of my information from that, but Lee was very happy with it and even mentioned it in the seminar, because they had Arnold at the seminar, and then they brought out Lee Haney, and they also brought out Ronnie Coleman, and then they brought out the winners from the night before, which was Brandon Curry and Terrence Ruffin, who won the Classic, and they also brought out Chris Bumstead, who was the winner of the Classic Physique Olympia 3 times in a row. So it was very enjoyable. It was really good. But yeah, Lee Haney gave me a shout out at the seminar, which was really cool. And he said, we're working on that. So I think this will be really be great for the up-and-comer kids, for the people just getting into bodybuilding. They're going to have to learn about the history of bodybuilding, and they cannot pass the course until they take the test about the history of bodybuilding. So that's going to be really interesting, putting together that whole course and teaching some future generations about the history, which is what we really need to do. All right. What else is going on? Oh, today is my birthday. You guys will probably hear this on March 10th, which is my birthday. 59 years old, so next year is the big 6-0. I'm the same age as Rich Gaspari. He was also born in 1963. And Michael Jordan was born in 1963. And Quentin Tarantino, one of my favorite filmmakers, was also born in 1963. I'm reading a book about Tarantino now called Tarantino Retrospective. It's all about all of his movies. It's one of those big coffee table books where they have huge pictures. And it's really, really cool. It's really interesting. Guy is very passionate about making movies, just like I'm passionate about bodybuilding, so I could kind of relate to him. I was born on the same day as John Hamm, the guy from Mad Men, and also Sharon Stone, March 10th. Lee Labrada just had a birthday on March 8th. He is 62 years old. Lee is looking good. Barry DeMay had a birthday last month, I think in February. Barry DeMay is 60, and he looks fantastic, man. He's been posting some pictures on Instagram. He is in fantastic shape. So I contacted him. I want to get him back on the podcast. Maybe we can bring him on with Lee Labrada or Lee Haney or one of the other guys that he used to compete, Mike Christian. That would be a good one. He didn't respond. So I'll just, again, have to keep trying. You know how that goes. Got to keep bugging these guys. We did get a couple emails last week, so I'll read those. This one says, hey, John, I'm just writing to say how much I enjoyed the recent Jerry Branum interviews, especially the recap on 1991, which was just a few years after I got into bodybuilding. Have you ever considered interviewing John Balik, Steve Holman, or Ron Harris? I was an avid reader of Iron Man, including your column, and I always thought it provided the best training information. Happy belated New Year to you, and hope all is well. Chris. I don't talk to Steve Holman anymore. He was the editor-in-chief of Iron Man, but yeah, he might be a good interview. John Balik I did interview several years ago, but I'd love to get all these guys back on the show, because now we're doing it on Zoom. We can also put it on YouTube, so... Before, we were just doing the interviews by phone, and it wasn't on video at all. So now we've got a whole new avenue for it. So yeah, I'll try to reach out to some of those guys. And then this one says, hello, John. Sorry for the inconvenience. I'm writing to you because I've just finished reading your book, Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1. It is a book that I found fantastic, and I learned a lot of things about Arnold, Sergio, and the many champions of the 1970s, which I have not had the opportunity to read in the magazines, which since I approached bodybuilding at the age of 16 in the 90s, I wanted to know if you're going to write any more books like this about the 80s and 90s samples. I wish you a good day. See you soon, Danilo. Yeah, well, I want to write obviously volume 2 of Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, which would probably cover a lot of the 1980s contest. So yeah, I just have to find the time to do that. I'm really busy now with this new job where I'm doing online training. I'm busy with that every day, but I'm still trying to figure out my schedule, so just be patient, and I will try to figure out how I can fit that in as well after I do the bodybuilding history for Lee Haney, of course. And after we finish with our interview with David, stick around because I'm going to read an article called Dave Hawk Soars, and that came from the January 1986 issue of Muscle and Fitness magazine, and this was written right after Dave won the Mr. USA contest I will read that article for you guys right after we get done with our interview. So here is part one of our interview with David Hawk. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest with us this week, Mr. David Hawk, who was the 1985 NPC USA champion. And then he spent several years as a professional IFBB bodybuilder. Dave, how you doing, buddy?
Very good, John. Good to be on your podcast and participating. It's been a number of years since we've seen each other around the industry a little bit, but, you know, we've all been kind of separated a bit. But I still like to reminisce back to those, I think it was, 1982, that you and I were on the Team Mr. America stage.
30 years ago. Can you believe that?
Yeah. I don't like that. I try not to think about that being that long ago.
I know.
It feels like it was yesterday, but that was some great times.
So how are you feeling? I remember you had a quad tear or something, right?
Actually two, right prior COVID, you know, meaning actually the 2020 Arnold was canceled due to COVID.
Yeah.
And I had the Ultimate Team Challenge, which is part of the Arnold Sports Festival. And we were all set up to go and put on our event there. Cause I've been going to the Arnold since, when it was the Mr. Worlds back in 86.
When you were in Arnold. It. Yeah.
I've been every year from 86 until 2020, I went to that show. And you normally put on the Ultimate Team Challenge there. And when COVID hit and canceled everything, I decided to renovate my master bathroom. So I wanted to do some demolition work. And my wife and I dug into it. I loaded up a huge trash can full of concrete and block because we were removed a wall and things. I pulled that thing outside the night that I canceled my flight and literally tripped over a step and blew out my patella and all three quadriceps, every tie into the knee. It was horrible. Actually, my shin bone shot up through my kneecap.
Ooh,
geez. It didn't break the skin.
Yeah.
So I've had a couple traumatic knee injuries. And then I no more than got the one back and healthy and got back to the gym. It's not right. Unlike a knee replacement, you know, they were working with things to try to reattach, you know, to the bone. And it's, you know, he said, you're never going to have really the flexation and the movement from left to right, you know, so I dealt with that. And I thought, okay, well, I'm aging and, you know, not competing or powerlifting.
Right.
No biggie, but it was challenging. And then literally a year and a half later, just getting through it, you know, I ended up blowing out the other one, missing the step coming down the steps and popped the kneecap, everything. The difference with this one, though, the patella broke and the quadriceps all let loose. And ultimately that time, the first one I had tissue that he could attach back in around the knee. So he was able to do it. And the one that didn't seem as bad the second time actually was worse because he said, you popped everything right at the edge of the kneecap and, you know, your joint. And he said, that's going to be hard to put back together. So, yeah, so I'm still back on the recovery train from that one. And I'll tell you, that was miserable. I mean, I was using a walker and lots of things. And then, you know, people go, hey, did you do that working out? And I said, kind of technically. And basically what the physician said to me is he said, Dave, he goes, though you didn't do this in the gym, he said, this is what the years of abuse on your knees, all the leg extensions, all the leg presses. He said, you assume that you're fine in there, but he said, you have had so many micro tears. And he said, it's almost like a fingernail. He said, you know how, like, as you age, you know, cartilage, you know, stiffens up and gets brittle. He said, everything has just been calcified. And he said, and, you know, you don't realize it until it happens and it just pops and breaks.
Oh, man.
So he said, though working out can be good and healthy, he said, you know, it's kind of like anything else. He goes, think about a pair of shoes that you use when you're working out or anything else. He goes, they de-shape, they deform, and they, you know, and they lose, you know, the pliability. And so,
yeah.
I'm back on my feet. And actually, believe it or not, my wife and I just started going back to the gym here 2 weeks ago. Cause, 4 weeks before this, I ended up getting COVID, you know, pretty seriously, got through it though, but that was miserable.
How long did that last, dude?
It lasted for me 3 weeks. Probably about 5 days, I had 103 temperature.
Oh, no kidding. You got the fever and everything.
I had the fever. I had everything, you know.
Yeah. And,
but, you know, just lots of fluids, good nutrition, and, doing things that I knew to do. I recovered and I feel good.
Yeah.
So it was kind of the Rogan way.
I had it myself about a month ago also, but it was only like a week. It just felt like a flu, you know. I didn't get temperature or anything. I didn't get a fever. But then the next week I went back to the gym and I was really out of it. Like my endurance was shot. I was like every set, I was like, oh wow.
Really, like two weeks,
you know?
Yeah. It hits everybody differently. And then, there's multiple strains out there. So they're going to affect everybody differently. And I'm healthy. I feel good. But the 3 weeks I went through it, I couldn't think right. Couldn't work. It really was a disruptor for, you know, my family. Everybody also naturally, you know, I'm going to be 60 here. People have concerns, you know, cause we're all aging got through it and I'm doing good. So, thanks.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you're healthy and it didn't affect you as bad. I think you're a little younger than I am. Maybe I don't know how much younger.
Yeah. When will you turn 60 this year?
Yeah, I turned 60 this July.
Okay. Yeah, I turned 60 next year. So I'm 1 year younger. Yeah.
Yep. 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 That's why I beat you in the Teenage America.
Right. Because you had that age.
I was older at the time. I had just a little more experience.
Yeah. Believe me, it wasn't even close.
Nah, you look great in that show. We had fun. I love looking back at those old times.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe, you know, I've known you this long, John.
So, I know. Yeah. It's hard to believe that many years have gone by. You know, I think about it all the time, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're doing good. I mean, actually, I love, seeing your posts and everything you do.
Thank you.
Inspires me. You know, it's nice. You know, here's the thing. It's bodybuilding is such a great sport. You know, it's unfortunate. You know, we do have, you know, some dark sides to the sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
They become a bit concerning, especially nowadays with COVID.
Yeah.
You know, because the human body wasn't really meant to hold the kind of weight that people carry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, I'm only 230 pounds now, but, you know, I can just imagine when, you know, I was heavier and if I had what happened to me, you know, a month ago with COVID, that would have been really tough. And so, I think that though you can be healthy and work out, you know, your heart and lungs, you know, your heart and lungs aren't growing to make a bigger body. The bigger body is just creating more pressure on what you have. And so, you know, since we aren't x-raying our hearts and lungs and seeing how good they are every day, you know, you have to imagine that heavy, intense weight and, you know, pushing your body to the limit can be tough on people, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, I saw a thing that, you know, Lee Haney and thing, you know, it's like, there's been a lot of deaths recently.
Last year.
You know, and, you wonder what caused that, you know, is it really the things they're doing or is it other elements like COVID and stuff that's coming into play? I lost my sister this year, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. So, my sister, perfectly healthy, everything good, you know, just, you know, passed out in her, bathroom and hit her head and.
Oh man.
Was gone. Yeah. Not like a heart attack or things like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it makes you wonder, you know, what's going on that is causing this. And almost kind of like, what's the actor that just passed away? God, from Full House. God, I'm terrible with names. Sorry. But anyways.
Oh, was it Bob Saget?
Bob Saget, yeah. So yeah. My sister had the same kind of episode he did.
Yeah, that's what happened to him. He passed out and hit his head too. Yeah.
And that, so, and then there's other people having these things happen to them. And it just really makes you wonder what's going on. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not normal. And then, not to get into the, you know, that's the thing. It's like, I know guys are doing things that are probably a little dangerous, but, you know, to some degree, you know, they should be healthy. And so, yeah. But you know, you don't know. Like, I mean, some insurance companies are actually coming out and saying that there's 40% higher deaths right now in younger people than ever before. And nobody's reported on it.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, CEOs of, certain insurance companies are saying, like, what's this sudden increase? So I don't like to hear it all about the bodybuilding and things that they take. And it could be just, there could be other elements that, could be affecting us that we have to be, you know, cautious of or paying attention to. So, but anyways, let's get on a good note.
Well, let's talk about your career, Dave. How did you, what got you involved with bodybuilding? What got you interested in that?
Well, to be quite honest with you, it was kind of the same, you know, kind of that same story. You want to be a professional football player. You want to be at least the starting player. And, you know, back in high school, there was a guy named John O'Rourke. He was a great, you know, really just a naturally talented athlete, super good guy. But he was the first string fullback. I was the second string fullback. You know, naturally, he was a little bit bigger than me, faster than me. And so I got into the weight training. My dad got me the 110-pound weight set, you know, outside the garage door, had my bench press and got a bunch of cinder block and was doing everything I could to increase the weight, increase the strength. And, ultimately wanted to, you know, perform better in football. And so I really I enjoyed the training. So it was that engagement of the, you know, working out and doing the bench press, doing the curls, doing the barbell rows and just T-bar rows and, you know, trying to squat without a squat rack and
right. I remember that.
Trying to do things in your backyard and gain muscle. And, it was fun at that time because your body, when you're young, it responds. You just naturally have, you know, that testosterone raging through your body when you're 16 years old. And so, I liked it. And then my sister who passed away was a golden girl for, the University of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And she was dating, became, Hall of Famer, Russ Grimm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they married he's my brother-in-law, but anyways, Russ played for Washington Redskins and had a glorious career as one of the Hogs there. But I went to a Temple game. I actually was going to Pitt, just started at Pitt, went to a Temple game, and I walked back by a newsstand and there was a magazine with Bill Pearl on the cover. I was like, Dad, you know, because my parents were with me naturally at that time when I all going to the game. I said, get me that. I read all about Bill Pearl, and then I saw Arnold in there, and then I saw all the guys back in the day, Lou Ferrigno, and that just was like, I'm going to do this. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you have to remember Bill Pearl back in 1980, 82, he was in phenomenal shape.
Great.
I mean, he's still, you know, today he's still doing.
Right. Yeah. He's in his 90s. Unbelievable. Yeah.
And, it was Bill Pearl who, engaged me into that. And then, I was training it. I went from training in my backyard with my friend to going to the church down the road, St. Athanasius. St. Athanasius had a barbell club.
Okay.
And,
cool.
There was a guy named Father Cellini. And Father Cellini was a super good guy. He was into powerlifting and things, you know, not necessarily bodybuilding.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I met him, you know, he kind of taught us, you know, he was, you know, saying, hey, there's a competition you could be doing. And from, you know, Father Cellini, then I met Jim Mannion going to the first, you know, Teenage Mr. Pittsburgh show. And, mm-hmm. the Mannions and I became very good friends, and it's been history from there. So,
wow.
Yeah. So it was, sports led me to bodybuilding and, you know, meeting good people who also enjoyed weight training and the benefits of it. And, you know, not just from trying to get big, but the health benefits of it also helped me to excel in the sport of bodybuilding. So,
so how old were you when you did your first show then, Dave?
First show, I was 16. Actually my first show. I wasn't even at Pitt yet. So my brother-in-law was playing at Pitt. So yeah, so I was 16 at the time because that's when I got the bill. Yeah, I got confused there. That's what happens when you turn in 16. it's like those cards in your head are really far back. It's like going to a library. Somebody misplaced the book and it's like, was supposed to be here, but then they put it behind the next year.
Right.
So
how did you do in that show?
I won my class, so I was really happy. Yeah, I won the medium weight the medium height or weight division at that time, and it was a lot of fun. When you posed, you were posing more like you were like a little teapot. Like it wasn't, you didn't really have all those skills or didn't learn all the skills of posing, you didn't have professional posing trunks. You had Speedo bathing suits.
Right.
With the big wide sides, looking like I was getting ready for the Olympics. So, and then you really didn't know how to tan or things at those times.
It was all amateur, right?
Yeah.
How did you feel going in your first show and taking first place? That had to be a...
You have to remember anytime you do well on a show, it's going to help excel your motivation to get to the next level. I was able to prove to myself that I could accomplish a goal. Mm-hmm. And it made me actually more dedicated and motivated, to get to the next level that, I could do this. And that's the thing. It's like, maybe I wasn't, I didn't have the speed or the size for, playing football.
Yeah.
I would have wanted, but, the sport of bodybuilding gave me the ability to, it was all myself. It's kind of like wrestling. I used to wrestle as well, amateur style wrestling. It's all on you. I mean, there's nobody else out there but you.
Yeah.
And how you train, how you diet, what you put into it, you get out of it. And it doesn't matter what people take. It matters on their passion and their ability to get to the top. I mean, certainly people can take things, and it does help, them grow or excel. But at the same time, when it comes to competing in a show, those are very driven, mentally dedicated individuals who are determined to win, so they take the I'm going to war approach and I'm going to do whatever it takes to be the best. And, if you have to suffer because you can't eat or limiting your water or doing certain things, you push yourself to the limit to be the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, did you have any plans on what you wanted to do with bodybuilding, Dave? I mean, when you did your first show, maybe either before the show or after the show, especially after winning your class.
Yeah. You have to remember it was one. I was young and impressionable at the time. So I liked the feeling of winning. I liked that people noticed me and that they appreciated the hard work and effort that I put into it. Not that the guys who were beside me weren't just as good, mm-hmm. because they were just, it's an opinionated sport and, and maybe somebody's a little tighter or, has a little more muscle or whatever it is. I mean, ultimately everybody on that stage has accomplished a goal, we'd all like to win. I was lucky that I did win at that time, but you have to remember, that's when kind of Arnold was breaking into the movies with Conan, Barbarian, and we also still followed, you have to remember, even though he wasn't a bodybuilder, Sly Stallone was, pretty jacked up at the time, doing Rocky and, that movie came out. Next thing you're like, Eye of the Tiger, man. So, it made you eat more, made you train harder. And that was the thing. You wanted to, you thought there was a end of the rainbow dream where you could become an actor, you could do something.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and one of the things that my dad said to me, John, which I thought was really kind of cool. He said, you know what, Dave? He said, I want you to really do whatever you need to do to be the best bodybuilder you can be. Because he says, you know what? He said, the work and dedication and everything you put to this. And he goes, I know you're smart, you know, in the sense that you're not going to do anything stupid. You're not going to do anything crazy. Mm-hmm. But he said, you know, he said, you really excel at this. And he said, you know what? He said, whether you're in sales or marketing or anything you do, he said, people are going to recognize you for the effort that you put into taking care of yourself and how you perceive yourself, you know, how, you know, just, you know, when, and that was the truth when I, and I excelled at sales very well, mm-hmm. because when people would see me, they go, wow, look at this guy. He's in really great shape. Mm-hmm. You know, because you didn't look like the average guy going in there, and they respected that. And sometimes people enjoyed seeing that, you know, you took care of yourself to an extent that, you know, was very noticeable. And next thing they wanted to do is work with you.
Yeah.
And so it opened a lot of doors, and that's the whole thing. It's kind of like, not only are you trying to improve your health and look better and maybe have some longevity from this, and the longevity thing is still out for debate, but it does open doors for you, because people do appreciate your dedication mm-hmm. to, they know that a diet that you, that you're watching what you eat and what you do, and you're trying to take care of yourself, and you're not out there partying and doing, you know, other things that bring yourself down.
Yeah.
Can put you somewhere else. So,
yeah. And you make a good point too about the movies. Cause back then I was competing around the same time you were as a teenager in Chicago, and everybody, there were so many teenagers that wanted to be bodybuilders back then. It was like so cool to have muscles. And it was probably because of Arnold and Stallone, you know, that was influencing us. And it was in the movies back then, but mm-hmm. there was just, maybe even Pumping Iron before that. You know, I think a lot of kids grew up watching Pumping Iron. We all wanted to be like Arnold, you know?
Well, yeah. And then too, I think, I don't know if it's just the change of times and electronics and social media, or there's too many hormones, you know, like estrogen hormones in the stuff we eat. I hate to say, a lot of men are pussies nowadays.
I know.
I mean, where were those? Like, I think men are supposed to have testosterone, and most men are supposed to be men, and women are supposed to be women. And, you know, they're certainly in between, but, and I don't have an issue with that. I'm just saying that, you know, when I wasn't, I just can't, maybe it's the time we grew up, John, but, you know, like wasting time on social media and just watching what everybody else is doing doesn't inspire me. Like, I mean, even though you want to see what other people do, you still have to come back to yourself and you have to challenge yourself. But I think people are so, you know, I hate to say it, it's almost like big tech has like tried to collapse the minds of teens to a point to where they're just so sucked in by Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and other social media things that they, and then gaming systems that they can't get out and do anything. All they're doing is this. Hey, you know, if this could build muscle, that would be great. Their thumbs are and fingers are in shape, but nothing else is. I mean, I love to see the young teens get involved, and, you know, young guys who have a passion. But I do find that social media has really corrupted the minds, and, you know, people don't go outside, people don't do anything, and then you have COVID that causes these, you know, this, you know, caused this separation as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not. I don't think it was meant for how humans were to
supposed to be. Yeah.
It's supposed to be. Exactly. I mean,
well, look at the teenage bodybuilding shows too. I mean, they're like non-existent now. They don't even exist really.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing. It's crazy. I mean, you wish that, you know, they're, and I don't know why this still, I mean, you would have thought, you know, muscle and fitness and flex would have still been the places where you see who is at the top of the sport and what you want to achieve, and brings those athletes out. Ultimately, social media has kind of made anybody who can kind of use their social media and take pictures of themselves and then morph their pictures or who, whatever it, it, and turns them into a celebrity. And they're
right.
What'd you do to get there? Well, I just had a good,
had a lot of likes.
Yeah. I got a lot of likes. Exactly. And then how crazy can I be to get those likes? And
you know, I know.
I mean, you know, but again, you know, it's well, it kind of, John, one of the things that I remember back, you remember the World Bodybuilding Federation? I mean, what was that? That had to have been, was that in 87? When did
91, 92.
Okay. So Vince had, like, he had Eddie Robinson, he had Jim Quinn, he had Troy Zuccolato, you know, Danny Padilla. God, he had a whole slew of bodybuilders that he was trying to grow into, you know, this network, and ultimately turn our sport into more entertainment, because that's the thing. I mean, it's great that we work out, great that we pose on stage, but ultimately, if you can make it more entertaining and make it into a lifestyle that, you know, more people would want to participate in, I think that, you know, it would help grow it as an industry. And even though the industry has grown and it's done very well on the supplemental side, and there is the point that, you know, when you have people, men and women, who are physically fit and just have a good structure and build, when they're in the gyms, they motivate all the other, you know, newcomers to the gym to get them started and into living a healthier lifestyle. So, I mean, it does work, but, you know, you just wish that, you know, the powers that be would have kind of made our sport a little bit more entertaining. And then two, at the same time, you know, it's just like, you know, football, they try to manage things, you know, not that I like the NFL, actually, I pretty much don't like the NFL, but they do have rules and regulations and they try to manage things. And so, I mean, I think if there was some ability to manage the sport a little better, I think we would have more appeal and there'd be more opportunity. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's still, you know, the sport is growing, but it's kind of crazy. It's growing just like the Masters Olympia is coming back.
This year.
I was kind of one of my friends I haven't talked to in, you know, probably like 6 years. I must have saw the video that, you know, talked about it coming back. He goes, "Are you ready?"
Yeah.
I said, "Nah, I don't think I'm ready." But I said, "I am 60. I'm going to be 60. So I might give it some thought." So, but I mean, it's crazy that you have more, you know, more seniors, people, that are getting into it, you know, as compared to the younger. It would be nice if both areas were growing. It seems like the teen area has really kind of dried up. And everything, you know, I mean, not that it's great that you start at 40 or 50 or 30. I mean, it's all great that you're doing it, but it's a shame that more young people aren't into it and being, you know, kind of enjoying the benefits of training. I'll tell you, the gym community is a great lifestyle for everybody. I mean, it has everybody who trains at the gym. I think, you know, you have kind of the same thoughts in life, same beliefs in life, you know, same, you know, you know,
same passions.
Passions and everything. So
yeah,
you know, it's a nice, it's a great community, because when you see somebody, so, you know, it's like car guys, you know, when you see somebody's car, you're a car guy. Kind of, you know, it's the same thing with bodybuilding and fitness, you know. You know, so, but.
Now, the next show you did, Dave, was the next show the Teenage Mr. America the next year? Was that the next
show? So I did the Teenage America, and then the next one actually was the after that I went, well, I did the Teen America, then I did the Teen Pennsylvania after that, and, you know, won the Teen Pennsylvania, because I competed in the Teen Pennsylvania a couple times, you know, so I was qualified for the Teen America. But I kind of went on to the Junior Nationals in 83, and that's where,
Before we go that far, let me take you back to that first Teen America, Mike Quinn won, right? And you got third.
Yeah, that was Doc. Doc's show, right?
Oh, Doc Neely. Yeah. Okay.
Doc Neely had that show. Yeah. And Mike Quinn, man, what a monster.
Yeah. He's, I was going to ask you what you thought of him as a teenager, right?
No, he wasn't a teenager. He was a man.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Actually, no, I mean, Mike's a super good guy. And and he actually, he was part of the World Bodybuilding Federation too.
Yeah, he was, right.
But Mike, it's kind of like, you know, I know you said to me, like when you saw me, you felt like, holy shit, who's this guy? Well, yeah. You know, when we all saw Mike, we thought, you know, what is he, the guest poser?
Right.
Who's he? I've never seen him before.
Right.
You know?
Right.
He was really jacked as a teenager, and you know,
big arms, yeah.
And you know, and he knew how to display himself, and he put a lot of attitude in the sport, you know what
yeah.
I mean? So,
yeah. But you got third in your class, right? How'd you feel about that?
I was just happy to be on the stage, John. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we all want to do better, you know, but that was when Victor.
Yeah, Victor's a brigand. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Victor was awesome. He and I looked like a pair of bookends.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I said, Victor, I think we were brothers. You know, but we looked a lot alike and had very similar shapes and physiques, and he won my class, and he's still a super guy. I'm still friends with him today.
I see him on Facebook too.
Victor's a super good guy, and then he's actually back, he's working out again, he's he's trying to build up, and I said, well, don't hurt yourself. I think I came in looking good, but I just wasn't, I was happy with the placing. I mean, it's kind of like when I, went from amateurs, to the winning the USA and the worlds. And then when I became a pro, I was back in that set of, I always place fourth, and unless I got totally crushed, I mean, it was one or the other, but I mean, And again, I don't think it was that my dedication and drive, for competing was all, I wanted to always win. But then again, I was married young, so I, had two beautiful children. Just
How old were you when you got married, Dave?
I was 20. I was 20.
20, okay. Right? Wow.
Yep. Yeah. And my first wife. So now, so I have 9 grandkids now.
See, so, really? No kidding.
Yeah, nine grandkids. But, like my daughter now, what is she? She's 37. My son's 35.
Okay.
My daughter, Maddie, she's like 23. And then I have a daughter, Nalyn, to my second wife, which Nalyn just turned 8, and my youngest is 5. And then,
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, I have to stay active and alive.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. A lot to keep up with.
Yeah. So
after you did that first Teen America, what did you feel you needed to work on for the next year? Did you feel like there were certain body parts or just overall maturity?
Yeah, it was just overall maturity and gaining our size, and that's the thing. It's like, I pushed myself to grow, and I did what I thought was right at that time, but at the same time, it's when we were bulking back in those earlier days, and I know that, great athletes, from kind of the mid 80s all started to, try to stay a little closer to their contest weight, maybe getting like, 10 to 15 pounds out of condition as compared to 30 to 50, And I remember, in my earlier days, I'd used to, try to get in calories. I'd eat a whole loaf of bread and peanut butter and jelly.
Right.
And, grab a gallon of milk and one meal.
Yeah.
And, you really didn't think sometimes you knew you had to eat protein. So you got, protein in where you could.
Yeah.
You didn't have a great, there was only soy protein at the time. So I didn't really like the drinks.
Yeah.
But I used to eat a lot of whole eggs and egg whites and, as you did, John.
Yeah.
And then, got into eating chicken breasts, and then, you know, it went from eating 7 chicken breasts, you know, a week to eating 40 pounds of chicken breast a week.
Right, right.
You know, so.
Did you have a fast metabolism? Did you have to eat a lot to gain weight?
Yeah, I had a, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. But as you age, you know, naturally that
yeah, changed. A lot of us were like that as teenagers, but yeah, of course it changes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you could consume a lot, but, you know, but then, you know, you'd hold a lot of water and, you know, yeah. Kind of, you know, a little bit of fat, but we, as you know, I remember I used to try to bulk up and, you know, I would probably lose about 25 to 30 pounds
for
my competition weight, you know.
Did you ever run into Bob Gruskin? Because he was working with a lot of guys on the East.
Yeah. Bob worked with me. It kind of helped me to dial in some of my, you know, managing my water and things like that, you know.
Yeah. But, yeah.
And then he helped me with my posing. So Bob was you know, a decent guy and good photographer and always, treated me well and was always on the up and up, which was cool.
Yeah, I know a lot of the guys on the East Coast really helped a lot of people out, you know, like John DeFendis, Jerry Scalise. And
I bet you somewhere when he passed away, there was a freezer full of all of our photography that was never released.
Yeah. You wonder what happened to all that.
Because I mean, I'm telling you, we shot photos all over Pittsburgh and, you know, mm-hmm. you know, in Philly and every, you know, anytime we compete in show, you'd see a couple of the pictures. And back then we didn't have, you know, the, you know, electronics that can just share images
right.
like that.
Right,
and so,
right.
You know, there's probably stacks and stacks of rolls of film that, you know,
yeah.
a lot of guys like us, you know, with that he took pictures of, we go, man, I wish I had those photos.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but Bob helped out.
Yeah. Okay. So now let's go to 1982. And this is the year that you were 19 years old. And mm-hmm. you did the Pennsylvania Championship. So you won the teenage, the overall, and then you went into the Mr. Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And you won your class there as a teenager.
Yeah. I won my class. Yeah. So yeah. I was pretty excited. Naturally, wouldn't that been cool if I actually won the teen and the men's
and the open?
That would have been exciting. But what's kind of crazy when you think about that, you know, you talk about big guys in the sport. You remember Bertle Fox?
Oh yeah.
So Bertle Fox was competing in the Night of Champions. Actually, he took second in the Night of Champions back in 1982.
Okay.
And he was probably in his prime.
Yeah.
And then literally 5 years later, I was on stage with him at the Night of Champions.
Yeah, right.
And he and I were head to head, but 1982 is great, winning the teenage Pennsylvania and winning the men's. And actually, that's when, you know, they had those big, glorious
huge trophies. Like, yeah.
5.5 feet tall trophies that you had.
Right.
Get a pallet to send it home.
Yeah, right. Now your physique really improved a lot, right, Dave? From 18 to 19 years old, you were a whole different bodybuilder.
Yes. And
size and great symmetry and.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, it's kind of, yeah. Well, so 18 to 19, you got to remember, you know, I was in control of my own destiny and, you mm-hmm. know, my dad, you know, and that's, you know, I had a lot of people telling me at that time, you know, if you just did this or if you just did that, you know, you could just be this much better. And, you know, and at the time, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, you made a choice, you know, it's like, you know, it, not that I, you know, I actually found a physician who helped me and because of my age and things like that. You know, I just, you could take virtually nothing and you, mm-hmm. it improved,
yeah.
your, it really improved your strength and improved your muscle, you know, and ultimately, you know, you want people to train natural as long as they possibly can.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, I never did anything like they do year round, mm-hmm. you know, but, mm-hmm. you know, when I was, getting ready for a show and things of that sort, you know, using a little bit of, you know, anabolics made a huge difference. And it was something that you could get under medical supervision back then.
And again,
I still had to, you still had to train, you still had to diet, you still had focus on what you're doing. And ultimately at the end of the day, it's going to come down to how you're genetically built, you know, what your symmetry is like, just the overall aesthetics of your physique. Then how did you diet and how did your hardness, you know, what's the hardness and muscle depth that you have?
Yeah.
And then how do you present it? You know, I mean, I'll tell you, when, believe it or not, even though like when we started in our, you know, 16, 17, 18, and we really didn't pose that great, by the time we were 19, 20 to 23, we were posing like, we were like, you know, Greek sculptures, you know, just beautiful. Look at me. We actually put some passion into our posing. And I have to tell you, you know, nowadays the posing's kind of horrible. I mean, you come out blocky. I mean, I don't know if it's just, you know, you're so massive, you can't actually move that well, you know, other than
even on the amateur level too, it's like, it seems like they don't work on it as much where, like you were saying back then, I think we all had a respect for the posing, you know, and we all felt like
posing,
it's up to us to do a good job with it, you know, because otherwise you don't get the respect from everyone else, you know.
You know what it is? The audience, here's the thing. It's great to watch the call outs and the comparisons, you know, with all the mandatories. But at the end of the day, that posing is what builds your audience.
Yeah.
You know, watching to, you know, because it's like anything, it's the music, it's the inspiration of the posing, it's the artistic ability and looking at the structure of that person, like the song and the posing tell you what kind of person that is. Like
in
some sort of sense, it's like you're an artist and, and I know I wasn't the greatest poser, but I did try to do my best at it and pick the right music. And I wanted to inspire people that they wanted to get out of their chair and get up and stand and clap.
Because that
was what drove people to go, man, you know, I want to go see that again, or I want to see who else can do that. And the women's, you know, nowadays, you know, like, you know, their women's fitness, you know, that's amazing what they can do with dance and moving and just everything. And that brings a larger audience to want to watch it.
Yeah.
And I think somewhere along the line that got lost a little bit. And, you know, kind of like one of those things, you know, like even back in the mid 80s, early 90s, I started competing in the mixed pairs.
Oh, you did? Yeah. I want to talk to you about that. Yeah.
So, I mean, that having, you know, two people posing together and doing a routine and creating a dance and, you know, a flow, you know, I mean, it really, you know, got the audience into looking at it. I mean, actually the mixed pairs, you know, was on the Wide World of Sports
back
years ago. They actually looked at it like, wow, this is something we can sell on television that people would love. And you'd think that would be here today, but it's not.
I just talked to Charles Gaines, the author of Pumping Iron, earlier this week, actually. And we were talking about the impact of posing, you know, and how it really brings out the artistic side of bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. And not enough people are pursuing that, you know, and that's what really creates the sport. I mean, the gym thing and building your physique is one thing, but then when you get up on stage, there's the artistic thing. And that can bring a whole new audience in. And there's so much room for creativity and potential in that.
You know? Absolutely. It's all about showmanship.
Yeah.
It's all about showmanship. I mean, you know, like when you watch gymnastics, it's all about how, you know, that perfection of those moves and those acrobatic, you know, abilities just, you know, just inspire you. And you go, wow, that was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, because people can see you're big, people can see your cut, but it's how you display it and entertain them at the end of the day, you know, and, and that's hopefully the future holds that.
And I like what you said too, about it tells you everything about the person. So whatever music that person's using and how they present their physique, that's an extension of their personality and who they are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. So
So let's talk about the the teenage Mr. America. Now, this was a AAU teenage. So from what I remember, Dave, your birthday was coming. I think it was the next day, wasn't it?
I made it by a day.
Yeah. Because I think that was the year the MPC had started also. So you were going to do the MPC one, but you had to do the AAU one because the MPC was too late in the year.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. So I just
in Chicago at the Medina Temple and I got to see you. I was in your class. Mm-hmm. And like I said, man, I thought your physique was unbelievable. I remember looking at you backstage. Yeah. I was like, wow. To me, you look like a pro bodybuilder.
Competing. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. My diet. I kind of hit it right on for that show. You know. And I was a little disappointed that I didn't win the overall. But it is what it is. It's
You won the overall. I know Anthony Watkins. He won the overall. He was a short, but he had great physique, especially as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought overall you had a better physique than him, but he had the Chicago factor because he was from Chicago. So
right. That's all right. So,
but you had to feel good about your physique at that point, right?
Well, see, that was the first time that, that was the first time my legs all started to come into gear. I always had issues with getting my legs, hardness in my legs. And I'll tell you a funny story about that. Steve, I don't know if you remember Steve Davis. So Steve Davis helped me win the, helped me do well at the World Games when I went over to the World Games to compete.
Okay.
And so just remember to ask me about that. It's a funny story. That Teenage America, my legs actually, I was able to flex them and pull in my quadricep separations. My legs, it was one of those body parts that just could really grow. I mean, there was a time that each one of my quads literally measured 33 inches. I mean,
holy,
they were just, but the problem was, even though I worked my calves, it almost looked like in some pictures that I had when I was bulking, it almost looked like eggs on toothpicks.
They're so big.
Yeah. But all the skin kind of just stretched around the leg. You couldn't pull in the separations. And so, it was one of those things that I used to have to work really hard and have to actually overtrain my legs to keep them down. And at the same time, and it was more quadricep than hamstring. My hamstrings do okay, but my quads just used to really grow.
Yeah.
But again, when I would get ready for a show, my upper body would be really nice and hard. And then my, quads, would be cut, but not really shredded. Like, even though there'd be weeks before, my legs would look, like when I'm training, I'd see striations and, see everything coming in. And then I don't know too, it's, I always had that little bit of, fear factor when I went to the shows, naturally when you start looking at people and then, I guess I would kick off, some sort of, cortisone in my head. And next thing I'd be like, my legs would be washing out, I'd be like, where's all this water coming from? Heaven drank.
right.
Yeah. Nothing was worse than getting to a show and then you start to oil yourself up and you're backstage. And even though your upper body and everything's tight and you can feel the muscle separation, and then you go to put oil on your legs and next thing they feel like blocky and full. And that was always a challenge for me, competing. And so dialing in my legs for a show was really something. And I don't know if it was the mental that would cause my body to hold water in my cup, on those days, or, just to take it to a time when I went to, the World Games right after the USA in 85. So anyway, Steve Davis and I traveled over to London together, and he was
the lightweight competitor, right?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, yep. Exactly.
He was from Pennsylvania too, right?
Yes, he was. Yeah, and so, Steve really tried to help me out. So he goes, "Oh, we're going to do this, and then literally, he goes, Dave, you keep taking your legs down. He goes, like, he always would keep me, you got to keep your legs propped up. Keep your legs propped up. He'd take me down to do biking. You know, he said, I need you to do this, need you to do this. And I said, okay, okay. So, you know, I followed along where, you know, he had me, you know, kind of doing extra cardio and all these kind of things. Well, next thing, he goes and takes his wrist straps and he got a hammer and nail somewhere. And I said, what's that for? He goes, we're going to nail your legs on the wall. He goes, you sleep tonight, so you're ready tomorrow. So think about this. You know, here we're in
this. You put the wrist straps around your ankles and nail them to the wall.
Yeah, no, he put wrist straps on my ankles. And I said, what if I have to piss? He goes, well, just try to wake me up and I'll get you done. Because he literally took and he nailed my legs to the top of the wall. So I was like sitting with my ass against the wall,
right, like
legs up. And yeah, because he goes, we got to make sure that you don't have any water in your legs for tomorrow. Well, the thing is that by the time I did get up and, you know, I actually had a rip because he didn't wake up and I'm like, Steve. So I pulled my legs. Well, it puts a big hole in the wall, you know, like I was like, oh my God, you know, cause you know, you're not really supposed to be nailing your legs into this. I don't even know where, if we were to, university or where we stayed, but it was like a hotel, but university thing. So,
yeah.
But anyways, when I got my legs down, put the hole in the wall, I couldn't actually even walk. I had to go to the bathroom so bad and I'm trying to crawl because my, my legs and feet were absolutely numb.
Like, oh, because man.
That was a weird experience, you know, but it did help. It did help, you know, yeah,
thank God it worked.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to our guest, David Hawk, for being on the show and talking about his career. We will have part two of our interview with Dave next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank all our Patreon donors for helping to support the show. I could not do the show without you guys. So thank you so much for being a part of our show and helping us out each month. If you want to become a Patreon donor yourself, if you like listening to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, you can just go on to our website. The official website for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is bodybuildinglegendsshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a link to click on it for the Patreon donors, and you can become a Patreon donor yourself. And I really appreciate all those guys who contribute to the show. I know I mention it every week, but without you guys, we could not do this. We don't really have any sponsors anymore. So we are relying on the Patreon donors. So you guys are awesome. All right. Without any further ado, I'm going to read this article, which comes from the January 1986 issue of Muscle and Fitness magazine. Lou Ferrigno and Betty Weider were on the cover of this issue. It's like I got a purple background. It says Betty Weider's in her 50s and Lou Ferrigno's 34. Lou is now 70. So this is going back. They also have a picture of Robert Blake from Beretta. And he says, how I beat drugs with iron. All right. But this article is about Dave Hawk. It says Dave Hawk soars. And it's written by Jim Mannion himself, the MPC chairman. It says, the World Games winners, no Pittsburgh Penguin. The bodybuilding world is perpetually aglitter with rising young stars, men and women who will soon make their marks as professional athletes. Each national and international championship produces one or more new stars. The supernova this year is 23-year-old David Hawk, current overall USA champion and light heavyweight World Games champ. Dave lives in Pittsburgh and has trained at my gym, so I've been able to watch him closely throughout his competitive career. He gained fame nationally by winning the light heavyweight class at the Teenage Nationals and then later the same class at the Junior Nationals. He's also won the Pennsylvania Championship and was primed to take on the big guns at the 84 USA. Unfortunately, a mistimed peak and a couple of weak body parts doomed him to a disappointing fourth place in the heavyweight class. Vowing to turn defeat into victory, Hawk slaved away at his training for the past year. He's improved his back and hamstrings so dramatically that when viewed from the rear, he appears to be a totally different bodybuilder. Add in some impressive new cuts in his quads and greater overall muscularity, and you come up with one of the best amateur physiques in the world. Dave Hawk's bodybuilding destiny has been intertwined with that of Richard Gasparri, who won the national and world championships last year and then made a sensational pro debut at the recent Night of the Champions in New York City. They met as teenagers, and Gasparri won the Junior Nationals, in which Dave took his class. Last year, Rich surged ahead by qualifying for the Mr. Olympia contest, only to have Hawk make his own sensational gains and qualify for the Mr. Olympia by winning the World Games. There is little doubt that the old Hawk-Gaspari rivalry will be renewed in pro competitions the next few years. Most young men who take up bodybuilding do so to gain muscular body weight and improve their sports performance. Hawk started for the same reasons about 5 years ago when he weighed only 140 pounds at his current 5'7.5" height. He succeeded in gradually adding 60 ripped up pounds of muscle to his frame, 90 pounds when you consider his fairly hard off-season body weight of 230. One might conclude that David Hawk builds muscle quite easily. Nothing could be further from the truth. Only Dave's quadriceps come up quickly, but they come up so easily that he actually must reduce their size prior to a competition in order to achieve optimum symmetry and proportions. Like most bodybuilders, Dave has had his share of weak muscle groups. My calves are my first weak point, he says, and I succeeded in bringing them up to a respectable level over a 1 year period. It also took a year of consistently high intensity training to bring up my weak back and hamstrings for this year's USA and World Games. I've been lucky in a way because some bodybuilders have chronic weak points that never seem to come up. My weaker body parts have always responded to specialized training. Maybe my plan of attack on weak muscle groups will help you to improve your physical proportions. The first thing I do is I try every imaginable exercise for the weak body part, sticking with each one for at least 2 to 3 weeks in order to determine which movements I can best feel working the area. Then I stick with that exercise or those exercises until the lagging muscle group is up to par. I also crank up the mental intensity until my mind is actually in the muscle for every repetition of every set of the workout. You simply can't push hard in a specialization workout unless you have an intense desire to succeed as a bodybuilder and can focus that desire into pinpoint concentration on the working muscles during each exercise. I do tend to do a few more sets for weaker muscle groups, but I also do so while keeping a sharp eye out for those clear-cut signals of overtraining. You'll never make good gains on any muscle group, let alone a weak one, if you overtrain it in the gym and/or don't allow yourself enough time to sleep and rest between workouts. You might actually improve a weak area more quickly if you slightly reduce the total number of sets for the muscle group while increasing the intensity within each set. During an off-season cycle, I'm a big believer in the Weider force reps and the retro gravity training principles to push a muscle well past the normal failure point and into a growth zone that's incredibly productive. Dave Hawk's entire training program shows the indelible imprint of the Weider system of training. Other favorite Weider training principles include the split system, the double split system, supersets, cheating, quality training, and isotension. Hawk has used every Weider training principle in his workouts at one time or another, utilizing the master principle, instinctive training, to evaluate his experiments with those various training techniques. Dave follows a four-day training cycle year-round, 3 workout days followed by 1 rest day. Off-season, he hits the gym once a day for about 1.5 hours. And when peaking for a contest, he works out twice a day for a total of 3 to 3.5 hours. He rests 60 to 90 seconds between sets during the off-season cycle, and he trains almost nonstop during his peaking phase. Here's how David Hawk splits up his body parts during an off-season training cycle. Day 1 is chest, biceps, hamstrings. Day 2 is lats, traps, calves. Day 3 is shoulders, triceps, quads, and day 4 is rest. Note, Dave does abdominals roughly every other day. During a peaking cycle, Dave's double split routine looks like this. Day 1 in the morning, he does back and abdominals, and in the evening, he does traps, calves, and erectors. Day 2 in the morning, he does chest and abdominals. At the evening, he does triceps and shoulders. And then day 3 in the morning, he does quads. In the evening, he does hamstrings and abdominals. And then he rests on day 4. Hawk performs fewer total sets for each body part in the offseason, but increases his number of sets for every muscle group when peaking. For example, biceps and triceps are both stressed with 9 total sets offseason versus 16 prior to a show. And chest and back are stressed with 16 total sets offseason versus 22 prior to a contest. Since Dave succeeded so magnificently in bringing up his lagging back development this past year, I asked him for a sample pre-contest back training program. Here it is. Chins behind the neck, 4 sets of 20 to 25 reps. Front chins for 4 sets of 20 to 25 reps. Parallel grip pulldowns, front and back, 4 sets of 20 to 25 reps. Barbell bent over rows, wide grip, 4 sets of 20 to 25 reps. Deadlifts, 4 sets, 15 to 20 reps. And seated pulley rows, 2 to 3 sets, 15 to 20 reps. Obviously, this program is intended only for very advanced bodybuilders entering national and international contests like Dave has this year. When you look at the intensity of this program, you can appreciate why he works only back with a little low-intensity abdominal exercise on his day one morning training session. You might wonder about trapezius training since the traps are part of the back. Dave trains them, but less intensely than normal because this body part comes up very easily. A typical pre-contest trapezius routine would consist of upright rows, four sets of 15 reps, and barbell shrugs, two sets of 15 reps. Dave does about 1 hour of aerobics per day when peaking, either riding a stationary bike or jumping rope. He likes to wrap the area he's working with plastic garbage bags to increase perspiration. Dave's off-season diet consists of about 6,000 calories split up into six meals. Four of those meals include protein, while two consist only of carbohydrate foods. Normally, his protein intake comes from white meats, protein supplements, and Weider Life Essence amino acid capsules. Dave started dieting 8 weeks prior to the USA, averaging about 1,800 calories per day. His pre-contest diet consists primarily of fish, aminos, starch, carbs, salads, and a little fruit. Of course, he takes plenty of vitamins and minerals to supplement this lower calorie diet and maintain an optimum health. Dave manages a waterproof company, Michael Hauer Inc. in Pittsburgh. It's an ideal job, he notes, because the people I work for are friends who take a deep interest in my progress as a bodybuilder. They make it easy for me to adjust my schedule to allow for all the hard training I need during a peaking cycle. And although they like my work, they're very supportive of my goal to one day become a successful professional bodybuilder working in some capacity for Joe Weider. I asked Dave to describe himself in one paragraph. I succeed because I am goal-oriented and I want to make it to the top more than most other bodybuilders, he answers. But I don't let bodybuilding rule my life and give me a big head. Instead, my training merely enhances my life. That's one big reason why I enjoy training so much and will probably have great longevity in the sport. I have arrived as a bodybuilder and I'm here to stay. All right. Good old school article from David Hawk. Man, it's funny how much they used to train back then. It's so crazy. Double split workouts, six workouts every 3 days. Interesting how he did so many reps on his back workout. You would think he would go heavier to build it up, but he was doing 20 to 25 reps on everything. So that was really interesting. And then the diet, 6,000 calories in the off season and only 1,800 for a contest. So did some crazy stuff back in the 80s and even more so in the 70s. All right, guys, that is it for our show this week. I hope you enjoyed it. We will be back next week for part two of our interview with David Hawk. Until then, train hard, stay safe, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.